So here we are today. It's me, Zara Tangora,
And me, Bobby Conforto.
and we are the mother-daughter team behind Processing here on Heritage Radio Network, which is a show about the intersection of food and grief. Bobby, hi, how are you?
I'm good. I'm glad to.
Good. And we're here to talk about today our beloved host network, Heritage Radio Network. And just talk to you a little bit about the importance of listener support. So, if you enjoy listening to this podcast or any of the other wonderful podcasts that we have here on HRN, the best way to show your support is to become an HRN member. Bobby, don't you think that HRN is a cool club to become a member of?
I think it's amazing. And from the beginning, when we were recording at Roberta's and, meeting all the staff and having that wonderful space and realizing all the interesting shows that are on here. I just looked last night to see the array of new shows and different shows all about food and spirits. And it's a wonderful network to be a part of.
It is a wonderful network, and it is a great honor to be on here. And so, you can also set up a recurring monthly donation for any amount of money. It can be $1, $5, $10, a different amount. And you can choose the show, this show, Processing, if you'd like, in the designated drop-down menu as a way to kind of donate. So you can count on Bobby and I each week to make this show. We love doing it. We love talking with the incredible people who are generous in spirit enough to come on and share these really compelling and often difficult stories.
Intimacy,
And
yes.
hang on, can you cut that part? What was that, Bobby?
I just said, and the intimate stories. I just said intimate.
So I'm going to go back a little bit. So you can count on Bobby and I to come on each week and welcome our wonderful guests to share these intimate, beautiful stories that about their lives. And all right, I'm going to go back actually. Cut that. So you can count on Bobby and I to come on each week to keep making episodes of Processing and interviewing amazing, wonderful people who are so generous of spirit and sharing these very intimate, vulnerable stories with us and with you guys. And we want to keep working together to keep it going.
Yes. And part of it, we have to support the structure that's supporting us to be here.
Absolutely. That's a really, really good way of putting it. So at Heritage Radio Network, we like to give our regular special treatment. Sign up to become a monthly donor and get access to our very special secret menu. We've gathered exclusive discounts and offers from some of our favorite food and beverage brands. Enjoy insider pricing on goods that will ship right to your door. Become our community. I'm sorry, right to your door. Join our community of monthly donors. Special deals will come right your way throughout the summer. So yeah, we encourage you guys to become a monthly sustaining member at HRN and go on to heritageradionetwork.org/donate to get started.
Thank
Thanks.
you for joining us, and thank you, HRN.
Welcome to Processing, a show about the intersection of food and grief with your hosts, me, Bobby Conforto.
And you, Zara Tangora.
I tricked you. I knew you the last couple of episodes. You just snuck right in there and stole my name. So I thought today the joke's on you. Hi, Bobby. How are you?
I'm good. I feel my heart is filled with warmth and love, and tears are in my eyes and from joy and love. And it was just such a wonderful episode with our best friend Kathy Bottoli.
Yeah, I mean, this was a great episode. I'm not going to give too much away because I feel like you guys should really tune in. But it's a Kathy Bottoli returns episode to kind of update us on some of the things that have happened in her life. She was one of our first guests, and she is an incredible friend, human being, an incredibly inspirational person. I think that I felt changed after this episode, and I know her really well. And this episode was full of a lot of, I think because it was with a friend and a trusted person, it was full of a lot of real human shit, defensiveness at times, anger a little bit, in leading up to it, love, sincerity, joking. I mean, it really kind of had all of the tenets of real human emotion in there. Would you
Wisdom,
agree?
pain, yeah,
Yeah.
lots.
But a wonderful episode, and we couldn't be more grateful to have Kathy. And Kathy is such a maternal figure to so many people, and I guarantee it's going to kind of probably feel that way to many of you. And also a friend, and just a when we talk about people who are warm, I'm not sure that, you know, Kathy could be any warmer. I don't know if I know anyone who is as warm. And it's really
She's pretty. A bright star. She's the brightest star in the sky.
It's pretty special. We're lucky to know this person and have them as one of the close people in our lives. And we are so excited to be able to just share her with you. And Kathy, thank you so much for your time.
You are so welcome.
Enjoy this episode.
She is. Yeah, guest star on the intro. Little teaser. Okay, we love you guys and take care of yourselves and each other.
Be Bye. Well. Bye.
Here today with one of our favorite guests of all time, and she's one of our favorite guests of all time because she is such a close family friend. She's a family member, really. The incomparable Miss Kathy Bottoli. Kathy, hi. Welcome back to Processing.
Thank you so much. It's been a couple of years.
It has. So you were really, I think, our first guest, and one of the first episodes that we aired, and it was such a wonderful episode. And you also have such a great quote that is included in our processing trailer, which was about Ben. And when after Michael's passing, you took a pint of Cherry Garcia into your bed and had a threesome with Ben, you and Ben and Jerry, which I think about all the time. It's such a sweet, funny thing.
Ben and two Jerrys. And a bunch of cherries.
And a bunch of cherries. You know, they make that ice cream so chunky because one of them, I can't remember who it is, Ben, it must be either Ben or Jerry, can't taste. So he can only kind of feel. So that's why there's so many chunks in that ice cream.
Ah.
Oh, that's interesting.
I know.
I wonder if his sense of smell is gone too.
I don't know. I mean, I think they're usually kind of closely tied, yeah?
Yes.
Yeah. So it's so nice to see you guys, and you're both together today at your house, and I wish I was there with you or that we were all in the studio like last time, but it's wonderful to kind of spend the morning together just however we can. And Kathy, so much has happened with you since we last had you on the show, and we just thought it would be a great opportunity for kind of an update because, you know, life changes and happens, and what's happened to you in the really weeks following our interview last time, you had some really major life changes, and we're hoping you can talk to us about that today.
I did. One day I had a tiny pain under my left breast and another one in my armpit, left armpit. And I called my doctor to see if she could see me that day, and she couldn't. She wasn't in the office. And I called my cardiologist, and he was in the hospital. And the nurse asked what, you know, I said, could you book me an appointment? And she said, what's going on? And I told her, and she said, go to the emergency room immediately. And I said, no, it's not. You know, it's just a little pain. And she said to me, this is a doctor's order. Go to the emergency room immediately. He will go to the emergency room in half an hour. And if you're not there, you know, we're going to call you back. Hmm. So I drove myself to the emergency room. And they did a cardiac workup on me. And it wasn't a cardiac thing, which I didn't think it was. But when they looked at my abdomen, the CT of the heart also shows the abdomen, they found I had stage 2 pancreatic cancer. That had, at that point, squeezed off the blood supply and essentially killed my spleen. Mm. And was eating the tail end of my pancreas, which is not the working end. So that sent me on the journey of a lifetime.
I bet. I know. I mean, we know. I don't actually even know where to start, but I am compelled to ask if you feel okay sharing, or, you know, whatever. What is that moment kind of like when you hear that news? What was the feeling you had?
Well, here was the interesting thing. One of my dear, dear, dear friends, who's a nurse practitioner, when they sent me to the hospital, I called her and she was working and she said, I'll get there as soon as I can. And while I was in the little cubby in the emergency room, they were telling all kinds of people all kinds of terrible things. Mm-hmm. And when it came time to tell me what was wrong with me, they brought me out of that room and into a little room with what I would refer to as a Victorian fainting chair.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, they used to have those fainting couches for
that's
women.
Right.
Yeah,
that's right. And when they heard that Mary Beth was a nurse practitioner who had been practicing for more than 30 years, they stopped talking to me and started talking to her. Mm. And music started to play in my head, which it always does. And I'm watching her face and the nurse's face and hearing just little snips of the conversation over the music that was playing. And I walked out of there knowing that I was in deep, deep stuff. That pancreatic cancer is one of the most deadly, that it kills people quickly, that whether I was, quote, lucky to find it at stage two, which most people don't, I wasn't lucky at all.
Yeah.
As your friend, I remember we all knew that this was, you know, such an emergency. It was such a serious, serious emergency. And I remember we felt so grateful that little pain that you felt, right? It wasn't even a pain. Didn't you tell me it was almost like a fluttering of a bird?
A little twinge, yeah. Yeah.
Sometimes our bodies will just tell us things that aren't related. I had a very dear friend who, when he was 26, he was like out at a show or something, and he came home and he started throwing up blood. And he went to the hospital, obviously, immediately, and found out that like only one of his heart valves was still working. But the blood was completely unrelated, had nothing to do with it. They're like, we have no idea why you were throwing up blood. It was just a sign. The body was just like, here's a sign, something's wrong. You know what I mean? Like, I want to let you know something's wrong. And if he hadn't gone into the hospital, I mean, he could have had a major heart attack and died. It's just interesting the way our bodies kind of give us
a little birdie that was waking you up.
Well, you know, I had breast cancer more than 22 years ago now. And one day I was standing, it was August, and I was standing on my deck and I was looking at my the front of my property, deciding where I was going to plant fall bulbs. And I heard this little voice in my head that said, dis-ease. I don't feel sick, but I have dis-ease. And somehow I walked into my house and I picked up the phone and I dialed my radiologist, who I'd been having
an affair
mammograms.
No.
Right? No affair. Trust me. But I'd been having mammograms for many years. I never knew his phone number by heart. I couldn't tell you the moment before that happened, what it was, and I couldn't tell you now, but I dialed that number And I said, I need a mammogram. And the nurse, who'd been there for many years, said to me, it's August. You always get them in December. Which my grandmother, who was very smart, told me when I was a young woman, as soon as I started getting my period, that every year you go to the doctor in the month you were born. Huh. It closes the book, closes the chapter on this year with a clean bill of health, and then it opens the new chapter with nice clean pages. And so I've done that for my whole life.
That's a really interesting way to look at your health, and I think it's pretty beautiful.
Well, you know, you need a way to, you need to stay on top of your health in order for nothing to get out of, you know, out of control. It's hard to remember to do that. Life is busy and, you know,
you
don't really think about doctors until there's something wrong or really wrong.
Absolutely. So, Kathy, you are someone who, and I'm sure I would have to go back and reference to know exactly what we said, but I know we mentioned in our last episode with you what a phenomenal cook, what a liver of life, what a person who loves food and the celebration around it, preparing it, and I mean, everything. And, you know, this obviously really changed that relationship for you. What was the kind of timeline with that of your relationship with food and in relation to your diagnosis of pancreatic cancer?
Well, 10 days after I got diagnosed, I had surgery. And I had a surgical complication that built a fluid sac around. So the tumor was wrapped around the artery that feeds the organs in your abdomen. Mm. So that's what starved off the spleen and was starving the pancreas. So that was the site, one of the main sites of the surgery. And the body has this way of building essentially a liquid pillow that surrounds the wounded area in order to protect it. And unfortunately, the wounded area also was right where my esophagus meets the stomach, and it blocked off my ability to swallow fully.
Oh, that's so rough.
In 3 months, I lost 45 pounds. And at first, I thought, what a wonderful, you know, side effect, that I've never been a skinny girl. My mate Michael, who was 6'3 and skinny, used to say we were a perfect pair because he was a string bean and I was a nice ripe tomato, and that together Michael. We made a wonderful dish.
Oh, that's true. That is true. String bean and tomatoes are delicious together.
But a tomato that turns into essentially a sun-dried tomato from getting no nutrients for a long time was really thrilling on one hand and terrifying on the other. I couldn't eat anything. Nothing would go down. I was frustrated. I was always hungry. I was very afraid for my life, that I was just going to starve to death. And I even at one point thought about, what's the point of trying to put food into you as nutritious and delicious as I was making it? if it's going nowhere.
Right. Yeah. So something so important to you in your life, you know, food has been, right, your enjoyment, your pleasure, your interest, your hobby, your passion, something that was so important. And I remember the time, you know, you're so smart and you kept trying to think, we all did, trying to think of ideas of what you could eat and what you could think of. I remember one day you and I sat down and we were talking and we said, okay, hamburger, we all have a fresh hamburger with meat. And I remember running to the butcher with such passion and telling the butcher, my best friend, she's so sick, please could you get me the finest piece of meat you can find and grind it by hand.
Sounds like Oliver.
Brisket and sirloin.
So I remember bringing back the chopped meat there was such an urgency in my heart because all of us felt such an urgency to help Kathy eat and nourish herself. And I remember we made the hamburger and you had one bite. And I made it just perfectly, everything I had ever learned about how to make a perfect hamburger, you know, just plain and a little salt on the outside when we're done. And I was so excited about it. And I remember the feeling of you not being able to eat and realizing no matter what we did, we tried everything.
Yes.
We even had baked macaroni gate, which is when I came over one day and I thought, okay, we talked about it. Maybe macaroni and cheese that would put weight on you. So I remember we looked through the refrigerator and we found like 8 different types of cheeses and I was going to make the greatest macaroni and cheese in the world. And I made this big sauce and it wasn't right. Nothing was right. And that feeling, you know, of being your friend who loves you so much and wanted to nourish you, there was nothing that was right.
How did that make you feel, though, Bobby? As like, what did you learn from that about?
Well, we've talked about this on the show before, that, you know, we've talked about how much when you love somebody and you want to nourish them and feed them and care for them, and it doesn't work and you feel so powerless. So obviously
right.
I felt really powerless.
And then what, though? So you feel powerless. Just because I think it's an important point to talk to, you know, people who are caretakers who end up in that situation where they feel powerless.
Well, we had a show last week where we were discussing with the guest about this, and we realized that sometimes caregivers try to take away your rights in a way. They try to take away, because in all of the care that they have, they somehow try to take ownership of your disease and the process and the healing. And that was something I had to come to grips with and I had to let go.
How did you come to grips with it? You know, like what was the turning point for you in being able to do that?
It was a constant letting go because I had to realize that this was Kathy's life and this was her decisions to make. And so whatever we thought that felt like was better for her, we had to realize she knew what was better for herself. So it was letting go. It was a constant letting go. Kathy, what was it like for you?
And it was, and you know, there were lots of things at play. Part of it was the inability for food to pass that closed gate, essentially. There was a nutritionalist that was working with the medical group that I go to. And she was saying to me, you can never eat anything raw again. You should never eat salads. You can't have fruit raw. The bacteria count, because you have no more spleen, you have no immunity. Mm. The chemo is making you immune suppressed. So, you know, you should only eat things that are absolutely fresh and you know the source of where they're coming from and organic and da 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 da
That's
da da
overwhelming.
Da, on and
that
on.
Sounds like really overwhelming. Did that kind of feel like, you know, having
well,
to make
was.
That? Yeah.
Food felt like poison to me.
Wow, that's a really good point there. Food felt like poison. When it's supposed to be the thing that's the nourishment, it's now becoming kind of a scary thing, almost. Like, what do? I don't want to do the wrong thing. Is that kind of what you're saying?
And then my friends would all bring me wonderful, beautiful food. And I would stack it in my refrigerator, knowing that I have a thing about food in the fridge. When does it turn from food to garbage? And all this food, and I could only eat a bite or so at a time, and then I would have a terrible, terrible bellyache. And my hunger was never satiated, but my ability to eat just wasn't there.
It's really
so
tough.
The food would just sit in my fridge, and I couldn't eat it for both of those reasons. The inability of it to get into my belly, and the fact that it would soon turn to something dangerous.
Yeah. And I think that this is a very important point, and kind of touching on what I was asking Bobby just earlier about, like, how, like, learning as a caretaker or a friend or a family member to let go. And, you know, it's so hard in life in general, I think, to ever get to that middle ground where we leave all of our backstory and all of our baggage and all of our own personal feelings and, you know, personal, you know, what makes us a human aside, and realize that, like, other people aren't coming from the same place. That's a very difficult thing to do anytime. But then when you add in the fact that you're worried for someone who you love so much, and all you want to do is help, and that feeling of helplessness, and I keep kind of circling around this and coming back to it, because I think it's really quite important, because I think that there's so much lost in non-communication when people are trying to be caregivers. But on both ends, I think just realizing that what we're trying not to say is that this really fucking sucks. That this is really, really scary. That I don't want you to die, and that I don't want to die. You know what I mean?
And
I think
and we assumptions do, that we make too.
Right. And I think we do all these things and inform our own past and our trauma and our, like, you know, personalities inform the way that we're, well, this person must not, and I'm not saying this is about you guys, I'm just saying in general, you know, that this person must not like what I made, or I'm not good enough. Or, but really what we're trying to say again is I am so fucking scared, you know, and like, we're not really conditioned, I don't think, as human beings, especially in this country and societally, to say, I am so fucking scared, you know? And so we say it with food, and we say it with flowers, and we say it with all these things that the other person, coming from what Kathy just expressed, which is a very interesting perspective, that food was dangerous to her. And it was so complicated for her because she was hungry and she was also afraid of what it could do to her body in this frail state. Like, just meeting in some way of admitting that we're both very scared, I think can. And also being scared doesn't mean you can't be hopeful, because I think there's something about when someone says, hey, I'm so scared, either party, the person who's sick or the caretaking person, I think there's some kind of, like, you know, imagined superstition in there, that if you say you're scared, it's like bad luck, you know, but it's not.
The duality, being able to express the duality. What do you remember, Kath?
So here's what, here's sort of what I saw in that period, that other people were scared. The people who loved me were scared. And the very deepest part of me wasn't scared. Mm. I thought I was going to die from this. I had sort of come to terms with that on a very private, didn't need to tell anybody about it level. And every time new food came into my house, even though I saw it as poison on one hand, the part of me that is loving and understanding saw it as this amazing outpouring of love from the people around me who loved me and who food has always been our connecting point on one point or on one place or another. And so I felt this constant river of love. And in a way, that's what nourished me in that period.
It's amazing, right? It's not the food itself, but just the intention behind it.
Yes. And even as I threw it away and held in my hands the containers that people brought it in, I would feel that as sort of like a love bucket that just sort of reminded me that that was a package of love that came to me. Mm-hmm. And that was, in that period, what was going to nurture me. Now, that surgical complication got smaller and smaller, and there that made it easier for me to eat. And most of that weight that I was at one point thrilled to be rid of, and at another point looked at myself like a refugee in a concentration camp, as skinny and not recognizable to myself. Most of that weight is back because I've embraced food and embraced life in a way that I wasn't able to in that period.
Yeah. That's it. I'm sorry. Go ahead, Kath.
That when you hit that turning point and think, oh, maybe I'm not going to die from this, then there's this this duality that says, I'm not afraid of dying. I've made my peace. I've done what I needed to in life. A lot of the things I thought were just closed books have opened up for me. But now I could write a new chapter for people to read, for me to read.
I was thinking about what you said before, that sometimes you didn't tell other people how you felt. Most often you didn't tell other people how you really felt. You know,
no.
Even those of us that were so close to you. And I had seen something where bravery is being the only one who knows you're afraid.
Yeah. You know, I could see and feel the pre-grieving that was going on in all of my friends.
But Kathy, there's something else about you. You know, you teach us, all of us. You have such qualities of grace and courage and bravery, and everyone who knows you learns from you. And so it wasn't that we were just scared and sad and grieving. We were also supporting the hope that you felt and that we all felt. And there was an energy that was very positive and very strong, but there's one issue that came up. COVID struck.
COVID and cancer are not a good combination. Certainly for a person whose major lifelines were my friends and eating together. Being together, hugging, kissing people on the mouth, touching all the time, sharing food on the same fork. That was a sense of isolation that was devastating.
Yeah.
Just devastating.
Yeah, I mean, really, like, this was like a 1-2 punch. COVID happened, like, pretty much right as you were in treatment, right? Like very shortly, a couple months after your initial diagnosis. I mean.
Yes, I got diagnosed in November and that happened in March. So yeah. I was really at the, you know, at the lowest point.
And what happened for you as someone who I know has had so much trauma and so much in ways, I don't want to say bad luck, because bad luck makes it seem like, you know, you've done so much out of the, you know, trials and tribulations that have been in your life. So I don't want to say bad luck, but you've had so many challenging situations and times when it must have felt like that. What is your secret? What do you tell yourself when you're at those points? What did you tell yourself when it's COVID and you're going through pancreatic cancer treatment and you're alone? What is going through Kathy Bodily's head at that moment, and how do you kind of, you know, continue to do each day?
Well, a few things. One that was sort of interesting and tried to put a perspective on it was, this is, as Bob Dylan would say, another simple twist of fate, that we are all born alone and we all die alone. And in this case, it wasn't that I had no one to love me, and that's why I died alone, but that sometimes big things happen in the world. I always wondered, during the world wars, when the world was in such chaos, the whole world, not just America and Vietnam, but the whole world was in chaos and people continued to have children. As a sign of hope for the future, and that we're all stuck in our history, so that sort of fed into it. And then there was this crazy sense of missing touch. So as a single woman, people don't touch you. I can't hug my my friends' husbands the way I could when I was mated to someone.
Yeah. Yes, you can. You can hug mine.
Bobby, I don't know.
There's just this social distance that begins to happen. And I knew that this disease was a little bit like that. And the most poignant example of that was one night I was really in just utter despair. It was a cold, rainy night in like March or April, you know, just that raw, cold, waiting for spring that may never come, it feels like.
Those are really tough months, though, too. And it's actually an interesting kind of, interrupt you, but those last kind of months of winter in March and April is kind of a bit of a metaphor for what it probably feels like to be in such deep, you know, traumatic situation.
Yes, I've always thought that a calendar photograph for March, you know, in July you have the beach scene with the colored umbrellas. Mm. March should be a giant gray pile of snow in a mall parking lot.
Right, with like candy wrappers and cigarette butts in it.
Yeah, it's just ugly.
It's truly the worst. I'm sorry to go off course, but I just think it was a kind of interesting little visual aid there.
Well, so on this nasty, nasty night, I was in real despair. And my friend Mary Beth, the nurse practitioner, called me, and I was just weeping on the phone. And she said, I have to go. And sort of hung up the phone quickly. And 5 minutes later, she was at my door, with a fold-up stadium chair and an umbrella and a blanket. Aww. and a raincoat on, And she sat outside my dining room doors, and I pulled a chair up to the edge of the door, and we sat with our knees together and talking on the telephone for her to be there to comfort me in this way there where she was in that cold, dark place where I was emotionally. And there we were, almost touching, but with glass between us. Mm. And I thought to myself, who would do that? You know, how loving is that? And what a metaphor for the dark place that I was in and how easy it was for that gesture to lift me out of it.
Really, it's a really beautiful, beautiful story. And Mary Beth is a beautiful person. And I think to have cultivated friendships like that, Kath, and people who will show up for you like that is what there is to do here in life, is to connect with people in that way. And it is really incredible the way you have the capacity to do that. And also just as a reminder for people, kind of just even what we were talking about before, we try on all these ways to help people, and that's not always the way that they need. And that's okay. That's part of it, you know, but man, just sometimes all someone needs is just for you to show up.
But you know, when people see that you're in need, they come at you with their own sense of what they think you need.
An agenda, their own agenda.
And much of the time, you don't know what you need.
Right.
I just knew that I was in a traumatic kind of a place, and that every love packet that got delivered to me was the nourishment that was feeding me.
I think knowing you, Kathy, also that your history and your history of your philosophy of life fed you as well. Because you learned from your grandparents, you know, from your experiences in life,
absolutely.
So many things from your love of music and all the things you learned from poetry of music. And I think you bring all that with you too. And that's part of what forms your courage and your strength.
I do. And I was also, I'm very clear on understanding that I was born with a happy soul. And that is one of my greatest gifts. It's easy for me to rise above the darkness. And it's interesting that attitude doesn't necessarily get given to each sibling in a family.
Totally.
Like, I had four siblings, three brothers and a sister, and not all of them were just happy, la-di-da attitude people. And certainly my sister, who's my only remaining sibling, looks at things from a much darker, much more cynical way than I do. Her attitude about men, even the men in her own family, her husband and her sons, is, oh, boys, you know, they just have their own thing, and you just have to sort of put up with the boyness of them.
Well, you know, if we asked our common friend, Bob Cook, the astrologer, about this stuff, I'm sure he'd have a lot to say about why people are born with different kind of temperaments as one point of view. He's a Jungian therapist and an astrologer, and so that's a very interesting kind of other topic.
The exact moment, the exact star, and position that we're born in has an influence too. That's the
right.
Concept of astrology, which you know, when you think of the bigger universe, it kind of makes sense. We're children of the universe. You know?
We are children of the universe, but we're also children of two imperfect humans who come together in a moment to create a new life. And I'm never sure about the positioning of stars or astrology. Michael used to have a wonderful way of expressing it. You know, some people would say, oh, Mercury is in retrograde. And his answer was always, no, Venus is up Uranus.
That's a classic one. Good old Michael. He was a funny guy.
Kathy, you know, we're talking about this experience of not being able to eat and of having pancreatic cancer. We're almost talking about as if it's in the past sense. So tell us, what's your current situation?
Well, I no longer have cancer in my pancreas or anywhere in my abdomen, but it migrated into my lungs earlier this year. I had a few months where where I thought I was cancer-free, and I was jubilant. And then it went to my lungs, so now I've just finished a long round of chemotherapy. I started that Christmas week. And I just finished about 3 weeks ago. I actually took a week off, what I called an extra week of parole, to go back to Utah to visit my family for a family funeral, and one of the best visits I've ever had there. And when I came back, my doctor told me that we should probably not do infusions anymore, but he was going to put me on this essentially oral chemo that is a maintenance drug that is absolutely fascinating in the way it works. It does three different things. The drug targets cancer cells and has a mechanism that pokes a hole in the cancer cell and kills it from within. The second way it works is it encases the cancer cell and squeezes it out. And the third way that it works is that because tumors need to be fed by blood supply, blood vessels grow to feed the tumor, and this stops the blood flow, stops those blood vessels from being able to feed the tumor. So,
yeah,
it's a wonder drug.
We had quite the celebration, knowing that this was possible for you.
Yes, it could buy me months. And when I told another friend about it, and I explained the mechanism, she said, oh, my husband, who had cancer for 13 years, was on this drug for 9 years. And it kept his cancer at bay for 9 out of 13 years.
That's amazing.
It is amazing. And maybe I won't get that long, but whatever I get will be such a gift. And so I started it a week, 10 days ago, and it's been really tough. The side effects, I usually don't have side effects, and when I did with infusions, they would shoot me full of cortisone, so I was, you know, like running on super fuel.
I remember that with my dad. He had the same thing. He would take really intense steroids.
Until I crashed. But I learned to, you know, I learned to understand how that mechanism worked. And right now, this new drug is kicking my butt, and I'm getting used to it. So I'm understanding how to deal with that. It's one of those that the bottle says you have to use gloves to handle the pills, to touch the bottle. So I started to see it as the way I saw food, something dangerous. And now I just pour two little pills morning and night into these beautiful, tiny little crystal shot glasses that were my grandma's. And I lift it up to the sky and say, here's hoping, and swallow them down. And I'm getting used to it, and I'm going to learn to embrace it, and it's going to work.
And if anybody can do that, Kathy, it's you.
So strong, Kathy. So yeah. I'm curious, what are some foods that are bringing you some kind of joy as of late? And I know maybe it's different with this past, since you started this drug, but whatever as of late means to you, I'm just curious about what you've been able to enjoy lately.
Well, I have to tell you, even when I couldn't eat, I would cook for myself and cook for the aide who was staying with me to help me, because she was not exactly a cook. And I've cooked all the way through. And food is still my passion and my joy. I'm never happier than when I'm in my kitchen.
You're an amazing cook, Kath.
And did you start going to restaurants?
Oh, absolutely.
Mm-hmm. What kind of things do you like these days?
I'm loving pizzas. There's a restaurant that is right next door to the theater that Michael and I used to run. And they have these great pizzas. So the other day I had a fig jam, roasted fig, prosciutto, and ricotta.
Yeah.
That was absolutely delicious. I've been making chicken wings with all kinds of crazy concocted sauces. I learned from you, Czar, that I've about a feta tzatziki that was just unbelievable.
So. Yum.
I've been having that with pita bread.
So good.
Or chips or crudité. Last night I had an Italian sweet sausage with fresh made rigatoni that was stuffed with ricotta cheese and a vodka sauce.
A stuffed rigatoni with sausage and vodka sauce. Now that, I'm going to stop you right there. That is a very, I mean, I'm sure they have it in other places in the country, but to me, a dish like that is a very Long Island kind of Italian dish that you're not going to find many other places. That sounds delicious. Where did you have that? What was the place?
Well, I actually bought it, the fresh pasta at Uncle Giuseppe's.
Okay.
Which is sort of my guilty pleasure shopping place.
Fun.
Some people go to the grocery store, but I prefer to market.
Oh, me too.
So I go one place for vegetables or two places for vegetables, and then I buy my meat at a butcher and... I buy only staples. I always wonder what people think when I go into a grocery store and all I'm buying is like, you know, Toilet paper and half and half.
I'm the same kind of shopper, because also it's kind of fun to like go around and get the things you need to get and know that, like, this place special. I mean, if you have, of course, that's like a, you know, position of privilege to be able to shop like that, but it is very fun.
So Kathy, are you telling us that you stuff the rigatoni yourself with?
Oh, no.
Oh,
she bought it stuffed, which is a revelation. Giuseppe, I didn't know.
Giuseppe himself.
I thought you were at a restaurant. Giuseppe himself is stuffing the rigatoni. Well, Kathy, I mean, we ask everyone the same thing, and we've asked you this before, and I don't know. I mean, obviously we've been talking about a different set of circumstances. Is there any advice that maybe you could have given yourself at whatever point you consider the beginning of this kind of grieving journey with cancer, and maybe it's in the hospital with your diagnosis or whatever point that is for you, knowing what you know now and what you've been through?
Yes. That, and I gave it to myself, and really to live by this motto, is that we're all given a certain amount of days here, and none of us know what that is. Even for those of us who choose to leave early, but don't waste any one of them. Don't waste time on things that you can't change, in resenting them or feeling sorry for yourself. Every single moment we have here is precious and should be enjoyed to the absolute greatest degree. And, you know, I never really stopped cooking, even when I couldn't eat it. And my neighbors are always grateful for me.
We're all grateful for you. You're a really exemplary human being. A mentor, a friend, a surrogate mom to so many people.
I have to say, yeah. Your lasagna pop-up was an absolute treasure for me. I would get these pieces of lasagna, and I would cut them in half and have a little tiny piece and find and make a giant salad.
Oh, nice.
One of the best was the butternut squash with hazelnut.
Oh, yeah, that was a crowd favorite.
Oh, my God. That, and then I made a salad of arugula and pine nuts and caracara oranges and olives.
Ooh, that's a good combo.
It was stunningly delicious.
If anybody wants to get turned on, just call up Kathy and say, what you cooking?
I know. I almost feel like you should start like a food phone sex hotline where you just read menu items to people, because you have such a beautiful way of speaking and a nice voice. I would, like, we have mozzarella.
What are you wearing?
Yeah. What are you eating?
So I found a quote that we both love Elizabeth Gilbert very much. As a matter of fact, you've had some very rich experiences.
Yes, I have.
With Elizabeth Gilbert, who is the founder of Omega. And this is what she said. She said, without bravery, you will never know the world as richly as it is that longs to be known. And Kathy, that's you. It brings me tears, because you've really taught us all how to embrace not just life, but people. The way you embrace other human beings.
I love humanity. One of the things I love the most is the intimate encounters you have with people you will never see again. The person on the grocery store line, the person sitting on that bench in the park, somebody at the next table in a restaurant, where you could have this encounter that is so rich, and you don't know their name, you don't know their history, you don't know their families, but you know about their soul and who they are. And it's like getting to know stars personally. You know, that I don't mean movie stars. I mean the stars in the sky, that they're not your friends, but they're these glimmers of light that light up your life in a way that is brilliant and reminds you of the bigness of the universe and how diverse we all are.
Yeah.
You know?
Yes, absolutely. We're lucky to, you know, I think especially post-COVID, a lot of people who have not spent time around people, and of course, some people are more introverted, and I don't want to throw any kind of shade at anyone who doesn't maybe love people as much as you do or we do. But I think there's an inclination from a lot of folks in kind of re-getting back into society to be like, I don't want to be around people. I hate people, or I'm scared of people or whatever. And just that what you just said, Kath, is really a beautiful reminder of the advantage of what we, you know, have to gain from strangers and from people and from vignettes of people's lives and from connection, you know. And I think that in going forward, in, you know, reintroducing ourselves into the world, it's a really good thing to remember the value of strangers and the value of all these folks who you think maybe you don't have anything in common with or who you don't like. You know, it's a beautiful way to describe them as getting to know stars, and as everything that comes out of your mouth, whether you're sexily talking about rigatoni or waxing intellectually about life. It's an honor to get to listen to you talk and to hear your wisdom. And I don't say that lightly. That's not hyperbole at all, that you are really the wisest person that I've ever met. And I think a lot of people would probably share that sentiment. And it really is an honor to get to hear your thoughts and your perspective, because they're very, very valuable. Before we get out of here, there is one more thing that we always talk about, and I know that you're going to have an epic answer for this question. This is a segment that Bobby started, which I absolutely love. And it's a, yes, now I know you're going to give the best answer ever, so please deliver. So we like to think about, and for us, we're lucky because we're friends, we can actually make this happen. I wish it could be today. If we were all going to have, or I should say, for our next dinner together, what will we all bring to a meal that we get to share together?
Well, I have to say, there have been times that I have just lusted after the seafood tower that we had one Thanksgiving.
Oh, yeah.
Where there was every delicious representation of seafood that I think I've ever seen.
It was very nice. You brought crab claws and Louis sauce, I remember.
Who don't love a good Louis?
That was a beautiful, beautiful seafood tower. That was really nice.
And what would you have with that? You know, really, that is an appetizer, an entree. I think there was a mignonette sauce there that could serve as the vegetable. there was a little acid. There was a little heat. There was a little baked. So I think all you would need with that is
cocktails and dessert.
That's right. Dessert would have to be a lemon pie.
Ooh.
With whipped cream on the top.
Not, yes.
No meringue. No, none of those silly meringue curls with a with little torch.
Right, and I have the cocktail.
What are you going to bring for a cocktail?
What I'm going to bring is I'm going to bring passion fruits. Because we have a saying in the world of Kathy Bodily, which is
when life brings Kathy lemons, she makes passion fruit cocktails.
Oh, yes, I love it. Well, I feel like the only reasonable thing for me to bring is a delicious, still warm baguette, crunchy on the outside, nice and tender and delicious in the middle, and a giant chunk of beautiful grass-fed butter with sea salt on top.
Yep. Yep. There you go.
We got
that
it.
Is perfect.
We got it, ladies. Kathy, so you know, thank you.
And can
you
know I say what? One thing?
Yes, go ahead.
We often say to our guests, you know, how can we find you? And often guests have a website or a podcast or is there any way that our guests can find you, Kathy?
Well, I'm at the corner.
We'll give your exact longitude and latitude.
I actually have a necklace that has the longitude and latitude of where I live, where my daughter lives, and where she was born, which I think is interesting.
We'll put a photo of that on the internet, so then people will know how to find you.
So my email is Kathy, K-A-T-H-I-E Bodily, B-O-D-I-L-Y @gmail.com.
Thanks for sharing that. And I'm sure there's people out there who would probably want to send you a nice message or maybe, you know, just, I don't know. I can imagine that people might just use that email for some nice messages to you. And I want to personally thank you because I am not feeling well today. I'm grumpy. I double booked a guest. I am feeling stressed out because I'm about to take a big road trip. And my inner angsty child bubbled up at the beginning of this episode when we were about to record. And I almost just said, fuck it. I don't want to do this because I was embarrassed about double booking the guest and I really don't feel well. I just threw up because I took vitamins without eating any food. I'm just not well this morning. Like I am not on top of my game. And then I, even though it's because you and mom are together, I'm like looking at a split screen. I can barely see you. But the one time I actually saw you, there you guys are, you cutie pies, was I looked at you when I was about to say, fuck this. And I was like, don't waste this precious time with Kathy. And if she can do it, you can certainly get through whatever shit you have going on. So you're an inspiration in big ways, small ways. And I'm so glad that I did not say fuck this shit because that would have been an absolute, such a waste of a wonderful opportunity to share this really special time with you. So,
and now you. May you have the rest of the afternoon to hang around in your bed and read a book or watch The Property Brothers.
Or just gargle and gargle and gargle until I become one big salt lick myself from all the salt.
But I think it's the message of the podcast is really today, and what Kathy's message was really is to try to take in the moments as hard as they are. It takes a lot of courage to meet them, you know, even when you don't feel well and all the things that happen to us in life, but just meet the moment and surprises happen.
And here you are, and you did.
Yep.
And show up.
And here I am. What do you think of my new hair?
I think that you look amazing and a bit like 90s sensation Suzanne Powder. Do you remember her? Stop the Insanity. She was so hot and had the most amazing short, short bleach blonde hairdo. And she was, do you remember who I'm talking about, Kath?
She
was a fitness guru.
So.
I'm going to send you a picture of her. She's an incredibly gorgeous Australian woman with a very short haircut. And I think that you're channeling her vibes, and I think that you look incredible and beautiful as always.
Someone the other day said I look like Annie Lennox.
Yes, that was going to be my next one. A bit like a bear at Annie Lennox in her absolute prime.
I feel like Yoda.
Well, you know, maybe what's in the middle of Annie Lennox and Yoda? Like Ross Perot? I think you look amazing. And Mom, so do you.
Thanks, hon.
Trying to hide over there, you two cute people.
This has been a lovely show,
Ark.
We love to talk to you every which way, Kathy. And doing this out in the airwaves is a real honor. And thank you so much for being with us. We love you.
And thanks for asking me. I love this too.
Thank you so much, Kath.
You're better.
Thank you.
I love you.
I love you.
I love you. Thank you.
Thank you so much for joining us for Processing. We realize that sharing these types of deeply intimate stories on air is a very personal decision. We began this project as a way to connect our listeners through shared experiences and storytelling. We hope that Processing can be a platform for sharing, learning, and healing. We appreciate our guests' willingness to be vulnerable and value nothing more than making both our guests' and listeners' experiences with our show positive and progressive. If you're interested in being a guest on the show or writing in a listener letter, please email processing@heritageradionetwork.org. Please follow us at processing_podcast on Instagram. Processing is powered by Simplecast. Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Instagram and Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can also find us at facebook.com/heritageradionetwork. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, and more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Subscribe to the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join the HRN family by becoming a member. Just click at the heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.